Viajante.
Supposedly, he was born in a mental institution, and he sleeps over 1 hour a night.
Ed Hawken.
You're crazy.
Let's rock.
I haven't got time for this Mickey Mouse bullshit!
The Ed Hawken Show.
This is The Ed Hawken Show, episode, I think, 19. Yes, it's me, Ed Hawken, somehow still alive. I know it's been too long since the last episode, but you know how it is. Life can get in the way. But in any case, we got ourselves certainly this is a treat, especially for you followers of Braindead Radio or the boards, forums.braindeadradio.com. You may have heard him mentioned on Braindead Radio for the fact he found that Juggalo porn. You may also know for the fact that on the boards, he doesn't seem to wear any pants. But thankfully, he's wearing pants today. That's right. Here with me today is, in fact, Jake Scherzer. How are you doing, Jake?
I'm wonderful. About yourself?
Well, you know what? Under the circumstances, we'll keep it short. I'm alive, so we'll keep it like that.
Yeah, it can always be worse. Nobody has guns. Nobody's going to shoot you, so you're okay.
That's true. I'm not in deep with the mob.
You know, but if you were, you know, you don't have to say anything. I can just leave right now, and we'll be okay.
So. No, I'm pretty sure. In fact, the feds have this place bugged as we speak.
Okay, good, perfect.
But yes, I haven't gotten any Breaking Bad situations, because if I did, I'd be in a much better apartment and not the... you know, the American Apparel set that I have here, actually.
You'd be in the Inland Empire, and you'd be, like, manufacturing meth. You'd be making a lot of money. Okay.
That's true. It'd be like the Salton Sea.
You'd be Bryan Cranston. You'd be fine.
I'd be like that, or it'd be like the Salton Sea, which is like, although it'd be like Vincent D'Onofrio, Mr.
Really
Nose.
I really did like the Salton Sea, actually. That was a really good movie.
It was good. One of the last movies that featured a thin Val Kilmer.
Yeah, before he got, like, completely blown.
Really fat.
It was unbelievable. Like, did you see those pictures of him where he was, like, in some sort of, like, festival, and he's sitting there, and he's, like, all bloated, and he's just, like, disgusting. It's weird.
Oh, it's absolutely weird. It's crazy to see a, you know, well-known actor like that just say the hell with it. Basically, he imitated Brando so much he became like Brando. Now, I never seen The Island of Dr. Moreau. I hear it's okay, but I can't speak for that. But it's a shame that that guy, Val Kilmer, was once considered a sex symbol, if you can believe it. Yeah. So.
Well, I heard that, like, The Island of Dr. Moreau kind of sucked, so...
okay.
Yeah.
Well, some others may not agree with me, and then that's when I get the hate mail. But I did see The Blob 8, 1988. That was pretty good, actually. I was shocked.
Yeah, I think that's on, like, Netflix right now.
It is. Along with, I actually saw a zombie movie for the first time in a little while, Return of the Living Dead. That wasn't too bad, actually.
Which one? Was that, the original with What's-Her-Face?
It's the parody version of Night of the Living Dead. This is like a side
thing. Yeah, it's like a punk rock one, but yeah. There's a one girl who like completely gets naked, like her name is Trash or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
complete
like
new wave.
Yeah.
Such 80s goodness, new wave.
Shine the light over here. Trash is taking off her clothes again. And it's like all these like funky old punk rockers.
Yes.
And they're like listening to the Cramps and they're like riding their asses in like on these hot rods.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
Not only that, there's a guy dressed in a suit.
And Clue Gulager is like the main guy.
Yes. He's
which is weird because he's like 85 years old.
Yes.
And he still goes to like the New Beverly apparently. And he did like a lot of stuff there.
So. Oh yeah, no, he's always there. And the fact that not only that, speaking of Clue Gulager, that guy was in The Killers. With Ronald Reagan, if
oh my
you
God,
can believe
yeah,
that.
Where,
that's right.
With John Cassavetes and Ronald Reagan and Lee Marvin, yeah.
And
oh
Clue Gulager, of all people, is in that movie. So
holy
he got
shit.
To see that he was in the movie where Ronald Reagan slapped a woman. And so that is.
And John Cassavetes punched out Ronald Reagan. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, as your good friend Phil says, for that, John Cassavetes should be on the 50.
Exactly.
So, in any case, as I mentioned earlier, Jake has his pants on. He's not going to,
long. You never know.
Well, that's not the kind of thing I need right now.
Right,
but in any case, I do want to point out, and the reason you're here is that Jake is actually doing something that a lot of other people in this town do. You know, they have their aspirations. They try to get out there. Yours, for all intents and purposes, is comedy. Now I know Rob on Braindead Radio has talked to Siege about doing stand-up comedy, and he's never gotten around to it. We don't know. I mean, we're 3,000 miles away, not under 18 feet of snow. Ha ha!
Right,
yes.
And that's kind of like the entire, like, purpose. It's like the whole problem is, like, there's a problem with access in a lot of places. There's, like, a lot of places where people can't, like, find a decent open mic. There's places where they can't, like, go and, like, practice. And so they're kind of, like, stuck in their own, you know, universe.
Right. See,
and somewhere, like, here in L.A., where it's, like, you can find, like, an open mic, like you can throw a stick and hit an open mic.
Okay. And, now, that is very interesting. That's a good way of putting it. I mean, it's not even like, say, you're in a band. You could be in a band, you know, it's the classic story of some, you know, band or some, you know, you read the alternative press, it's some, you know, pop punk band of some, you know, bumfuck Iowa, and they still were able to make it and somehow pay for all those tats. But in any case, so you're doing stand-up comedy. I saw your graduation show on Sunday at the Ice House, a classic venue here in Los Angeles, actually in Pasadena, which is about 20 miles east of here. First off, I got to ask, and ultimately, and you know, the most important question is, what made you decide to do stand-up comedy?
I basically just, like, wanted to try something that I had never thought of before, and even though I had been, like, a huge fan of it, I wanted to do something that, like, completely scared the shit out of me. Because I came from a background where I was, like, really, like, soft-spoken. I didn't really say a whole lot. I was kind of, like, really reserved. So, you know, and I just kind of, like, gradually developed my voice over, like, the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. Other than that, I was kind of, like, really introverted. So,
right.
Then I got to the point where I said, you know what, let me just go and do something, like, that's basically essentially public speaking, but you have to make people laugh. And it's like, so you're stuck with that one little, you know, that one goal. And it terrified the living hell out of me, but I wanted to try it. I said, you know what, let me try something new for once. So,
okay. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. It really is. And, you know, was it any specific one moment to say, because as you just said, you wanted to get out there and, you know, do something that was frightening to you, that at one moment you said, you know what, I'm going to get my ass up there and I'm going to go ahead and do a routine.
Well, I actually got offered the opportunity by my friend Bobby Oliver. She's the one who runs Stand Up Academy at standupacademy.net, and she's also at bobbyoliver.net. She's actually a pretty, you know, successful local comedian, and she's also done, you know, stuff all, like, around the country. So she's, you know, and she runs this class. Mm-hmm. And so she, like, basically said, you know, I have this class. Do you want to try it? I had the extra money. I said, yeah, sure, why not? So I ponied up, and I went ahead and I tried it out, and I really liked it. Like, every time that I went in there, I got really positive feedback. You know, you get to go up on stage. Granted, it's in front of, like, your fellow classmates, but
right.
at the same time, you're going up on stage in front of people. And that was what scared the living hell out of me, because I wasn't ready for that. I was just like, oh, my God, let me just sit here. And I wrote, like, a really quick set list together, like, like a couple days before the class. And I was, like, working on a couple of jokes, and then I went up there and, like, kind of barfed it out, and I was going, like, way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And her immediate advice was, like, all right, Jake, slow the fuck down. You young people talk fast already, and, you know, your delivery is even faster when you're up there with all that nervous energy.
Right.
And so, like, I kind of, like, took that into heart, and so, like, I took that, and I just, like, I kept going after, like, the subsequent classes, and it just kept getting better and better. Like, I just felt like I was more confident in my delivery, that I was just more, like, straightforward, and it worked out.
Okay.
So it kind of, like, helped as far as, like, the whole, you know, being afraid to get up in front of, like, a whole bunch of people and, like, develop my own personal speaking voice. So.
Well, that's great. And I got to say, for this class, I mean, what was really nice was that you had all kinds of people there. You had,
right.
you know, I mean, and then the show you were at also had it mixed in with some regular professionals. But, you know, I think everyone in that class was just average people. There was one guy who was a freaking rocket scientist.
Yeah,
another one was a single mom.
There were actually a couple others
you know?
Who, like, do some local stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. But they still keep coming back to the class, and they keep, like, coming back to, like, work on their jokes and stuff. So it's good that they have, like, that kind of reciprocation where it's
right.
like, it feels like a community, which is the best part about it. So that was what I liked about it the most.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that seems great. But as I said, you know, just the fact you had just regular people there, average people, you know. It's not like, you know, these are all, you know, starving artists trying to make it, you know, to stand in stand-up community. But you're right. I mean, to me, that seems like a great place to get some good feedback where it's not going to be an echo chamber because... And I remember this, I think it was at our friend Taman over at his house. Some guy was talking about how he was considering doing stand-up comedy himself, but he was always – but his reservation was the fact that he was – you know, the problem is that if you're with your friends and they say, oh, that guy's a funny guy – that's not the same thing as going in front of an audience.
It totally doesn't translate over at all. Like, I mean, you can be funny with your friends, and you cannot be funny on stage. And there's
right.
a lot of people who mistake one for the other.
Yes.
And that's, like, the kind of people that you have to sort of weed out.
And I think part of that has to do with the fact, for one, when you're with your friends, there's just certain types of things that everyone, you know, there's a lot of in-jokes.
Yeah,
and
you
can also
rapport,
gauge
so.
A lot easier how, you know, their sensibilities are and how you can exploit that when you're with a general audience. And I imagine you've come across this a lot because sometimes people ask me the same thing. Why don't you go up there? It's like the stuff I talk about and the stuff I like, it's, you know, only a few people are going to get it. I imagine this has come across with you where you got to, like, mainstream the joke enough or what you're talking about enough to where people are going to get. Not necessarily dumb it down, but that you have to tailor it in such a way where you're not going to be like Dennis Miller and people are going to be looking at you like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, you have to make it like, you have to make it generally more palatable, which is a good thing, because I think that that's like kind of one of the biggest parts of, you know, comedy, you know, works for, is that it speaks to like a lot of people on a lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to like be like one single niche kind of thing. And even when you're talking about like Dennis Miller, it's like he's kind of like got like the smarmy asshole demographic locked mm-hmm. down. Now that he's like a hyper conservative Republican, whatever,
right?
You know, I pay even less attention to him than I did before. But you know, the fact still remains. It's like he has a niche, but at the same time, I don't think you should like have to have a shtick per se.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about
now,
it.
Now that's interesting that you talked about that in terms of shtick, because There, you know, we all have our different types of comedians that we like. I don't know if you know, we'll definitely list those in a second.
Yeah.
For me, in terms of shtick, I guess, or the way they do a routine, I always enjoyed, I think, because I gave this some thought over the week, I always enjoy personally a comedian, for one, who is not bitter, because certain people, you know, certain comedians are bitter, and you can go with it. To me, sometimes it's a bit draining. Mm-hmm. I'll go into that in a bit, but I always enjoy... you know, where a comedian, it's almost being professor, you know, they're basically explaining a philosophy, they're trying to explore something. To me, that's where Louis C.K. comes in,
right.
and you know, because I was watching his show, Louis, on InstaView,
it's amazing.
And it really is. I gotta hand it to him, just the fact he has that combination of just, you know, he's talking about really difficult subject matter, but and he's also got this real surreal streak.
Yeah,
and
it's almost like a Woody Allen movie, but it's in a show. So.
Right, and it's fantastic, it really is. And then the other thing I tend to enjoy a lot is also, obviously, for ones, you know, that have a lot of intelligence, I enjoy Stephen Fry quite a bit. I don't know if you've ever seen his sketch show with Hugh Laurie.
I have not, no.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I wish I had, but I haven't.
A lot of, some of the series are on InstaView. It's fantastic, really. Now, the thing with the British shows is just the fact that they're going to talk about stuff where us Yanks are going to not have any idea what they're talking about, compounded with some of these shows are from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it even more so. But there's still some good stuff in there. To me, you know, it's something that's like, that I can relate to, and I can, well, except for the fact Stephen Fry was served some time in jail, but the fact that...
it's always kind of a downer.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, you learn from your mistakes, and then except for the time for the fact he had to shut down his Twitter feed, which was a shame. But I always like that, where it's you know, you're learning something along with, you know, something about. Now that doesn't mean I enjoy a good, you know, a good poop joke as much as the next man, but you have your limits. I mean, that's the way I, you know, there's different tastes and things like that. Now what about yourself? Who are your you know, your favorite comedians?
Well, pretty much. I mean, like, one of my first ones was pretty much Bill Hicks and, you know, Eddie Pryor, guys like that. I kind of grew up a little bit around comedy because my grandparents were, like, huge fans of it because mm-hmm. it's, like, when you're growing up, like, around the level of poverty, if not lower, you kind of, like, rely on comedy to, like, drag you through.
Right.
Because, like, when you wake up every day and you, like, kind of, like, wake up in a trailer and everything is just, like, shit and you're just, like, okay, this is all that we have, you sort of, like, start to take humor for granted. Mm-hmm. So you start, you know, enjoying it more. And there were people like Red Skelton, people like that.
Wow.
A lot of the like older classical acts that my grandparents still liked, but still, you know, put them out there. But there were like a lot more progressive acts, like I said, you know, Eddie Pryor. I mean, Richard Pryor and then Eddie Murphy. You know, guys
were
like
they
that.
Were they fans? Did they listen to? I don't know if. Well, it'd probably be outside the wheelhouse like Lenny Bruce, although Bruce...
He was a little too subversive for like that point. I mean, we basically got like what we could get like on HBO, Showtime, mm-hmm. PBS, things like that. But it was still like, it was pretty, you know, pretty great considering, and they still enjoyed it, which was like amazing to me, because you wouldn't expect that from, you know, people who are stuck in like a really small town in East Texas. So,
wow, that is something.
And, you know, then we had like access to like George Carlin stuff and things like that, so it was all pretty well.
I have to say, I mean, for me, Carlin, you know, obviously is one of the, was, rest his soul was, you know, one of the greats for obvious reasons. Although to me, and I think that was just due to his age, when he got towards the end, it was, you know, and unfortunately, you know, this is the thing where when we get into the politics side of it, comedy, like anything, you got to go at it with a very fine edge. And that's the thing what's so difficult about it, to me, is the fact it's obviously, I mean, they always say, you know, writing drama is one thing, comedy is even more difficult.
Right.
And it's just the way of going about it, it's indescribable because it's not a tangible thing. It just... But anyway, for me, when Carlin got, you know, obviously he was much older, he was probably sick, and he just got very bitter. It was like, I don't really want to listen to this.
After a while, and, you know, I can understand that to a point, because after a while, when you're so busy plugging away at comedy, and you're doing the same fucking thing over and over for, like, you know, ungrateful crowds, for crowds who expect you to have, like, some sort of, not, like, niche, you mm-hmm. know, I can see, like, how you would get incredibly bitter with that. But at the same time, you know, that was his deal. He was, like, the bitter guy. And, you know, even though, like, he did, like, his weatherman skit, shit like that.
Yeah.
It was still just, like, but it also came from a place of honesty, which was, like, a good thing with him.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas with other people who are, like, way more vitriolic these days, which is, like, that's a big deal with, like, a lot of comics. It's, like, they're all, like, rape jokes and, oh, my God, I'm just, like, as shocking as I can. After a while, you get kind of sick of that. It's, like, well, you want something that kind of speaks to people, like, a little bit. I mean, I'm not great at it right now, but at the same time, I look at people who, like, had a little bit of commentary, you know, like I said, you know, Bill Hicks, you know, he had political commentary. I mean, the Rush Limbaugh bit still makes me cry with laughter to this day, you know.
I will admit, and this is going to get me some grief, is the fact that I cop to the fact I've never actually sat down and listened to a Bill Hicks album.
That's okay. I definitely recommend Rant and E Minor.
That's what I hear. And the only thing I saw of Hicks was the documentary they had on TV some years back. I think Janine Garofalo was narrating it, and that was great. It's really a shame. Now, I mean, obviously, it wasn't all, you know, I mean, when he was in England, everyone loved him. He was doing his big shows. Those were great. Yeah, then you see, like, when he goes back to the States, and I think it was like he was doing some show in Dallas, it's some fuzzy, grainy video. He's like screaming at some audience member because he's high out of his mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, I mean, you know, it's you know.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the Freebird incident, which, you know, that was like his breaking point, apparently. Mm. And he would be able to go over to the UK and do, like, sets over there because his set was kind of inherently anti-American to an extent.
Right.
And, you know, at that point, that was what people wanted. And, you know, he would probably kill today if he came back now.
Oh, he passed away way too early.
Yeah, so
He would have had a field day for the past 8 years.
And it was funny because I would go back and, like, I remember when, like the past elections happened and, like, we knocked all the Republicans out of, you know, Congress and the Senate and everything. And, you know, I went back and I listened to, like, the Republican, you know, the elephant is dead, that one skit of his, where, like, talks about how, like, everybody's finally, like, knocking down the elephant and, like, Bush is finally, like, gone and things like that.
Right.
And it was still pretty prescient. It was weird to, like, listen to that and think, okay, well, that kind of applies now.
So. And to me, that, I mean, that's a great thing. If you could pull that off where the things you have talked about are still relevant to this day. That is something. That's not to say topical humor doesn't have its place. I think.
Right.
I mean, Bob Hope of all things.
It's also kind of depressing that the idea that our, you know, our world events have been so cyclical that all that shit happened again.
Yeah.
So like a comedian's routine could kind of like anticipate that.
Yes.
So you know, when you think about that, it's like, well, it doesn't speak too well for us, but at the same time, it works well for him.
Yeah.
So
that's what I think. You know, that's one of those stupid things I remember hearing about like during the election. If when you mention that, it's like. You know, the comedians would be like, oh, I don't want, you know, as a you know, personal respect, I don't want Palin getting into office, but if it happens as a comedy writer, I'm set for life.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But,
she basically, like, makes her own material, you know? Like,
yeah, as horrifying as that is. But, I have to, I'm trying to think of other, in terms of other comedians. Now, I have to say, if there's a comedian you want to nail down their style, would you say it's Bill Hicks, or would you try to go for more of a Louis C.K. variety, where like I said, this is the great thing about Louis C.K. is the fact that he's obviously calm, you know, and he's talking about it. And I have to hand it to him, the fact he talks about incredibly difficult stuff. I remember there's one bit on Louis where he's talking about basically dealing with child molesters and the fact that, you know, in trying to maybe not have such a great reaction so the kid doesn't end up dead. I mean, it's unbelievable he's able to pull that off. And, you know, he's got a very calm, measured manner way of it. Now, obviously, he's a master also what he does, because I had heard he would go out every night and do open mics.
Yeah.
And then what I think it may have been you that said on the board said that he had bombed one time and just like didn't do anything for a year.
I think it was him. I read something that was to that effect. It might not have been him, but it said that, you know, someone went and they bombed an open mic and they were terrified of doing comedy for like about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's like, you know, when I went to class, Bobby always like talked about, you know, the 10,000 hour theorem that I think it was like Malcolm Gladwell or Gladstone, something like that, proposed, where like if you spend 10,000 hours on something, then you will be like, or maybe 10,000. I don't remember the exact number. I'm kind of like falling apart.
Right. Yeah, no, you're doing fine. You're doing good.
But like, you know, it's like once you dedicate that amount of time to something, you consider yourself like you've mastered it. So. I think that, like, if you dedicate enough time to something, regardless of how much time you do, as long as you keep, like, going back and hitting it, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty much the best way to, like, hone your craft. And it's the same thing goes with, like, the Seinfeld, you know, the comedian documentary,
right.
Where it shows him, like, basically scrapping all of his old material and going back and trying to make, like, an entire new routine from scratch. And it shows him going out and going to all these open mics and just bombing consistently, like, bit after bit. And, you know, he's a really well-known comedian, so this isn't, like, him, like, being a fledgling. This is after him having his show and still going out and doing, you know, open mic stuff and, you know, working on his material and still bombing. So it kind of guarantees you that, you know, no matter how high you get on the food chain, that you're still going to be subject to the fact that you have to, like, get out there and you have to throw yourself into an audience and you have to, like, keep, you know, like, dedicating yourself to tempering, like, the idea of the joke and everything. Mm-hmm. Because it's all about, in the end, it's all about, like, how well you can deliver rather than who you are.
Right. Now, there's two great things. Now, first off, I know you mentioned comedian. I wish we actually had a movie that really that really detailed, you know, the life of the struggling comic, you know, in Los Angeles, and I wish Funny People had done that, but unfortunately they fucked it up.
I heard they did. I never
saw it. Oh, you don't want to watch it, believe me. It's a waste of time. It's I've always said this and I'll continue to say it. That movie tried to have it both ways and they failed to do either. It was either going to be a family domestic drama,
which is what, like, Judd Apatow was trying to reconcile personally.
Yeah, I could see that, but the problem is, once again, he's having it both ways, or it's about, see, because they did jack shit with the Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill arc of them trying to be struggling comedians and trying to make it, living in a very fucking amazing apartment, actually, but, yeah, and of all that stuff, but there's that, and then, so, yeah, there really hasn't been a movie like that, except I think maybe it's a movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, it was with Tom Hanks, it was called, I think, Gasworks, where he tries to play a stand-up comedian at night and a med school student by day, with Sally Field. I kid you not, such a movie exists. I've never actually watched it, but it was during the time when Tom Hanks was a comedian, I guess. Or, well, he did comedies. He wasn't necessarily, I don't think he ever did stand-up, but he had a comedy thing, and... Right. The other thing, and as you mentioned about doing routines and doing it as you know, rather than who you are, I don't know if you ever read this. Did you ever read Steve Martin's Born Standing Up?
I actually did. I read that. It was one of the books that Bobby recommended when we first started the class. So I went and I read it, and it was pretty amazing. I
mean, yes.
Like, hearing him go through, like, his whole deal and, like, his whole surreal kind of, you know, bit anyway. And just the idea that he went through all these different channels and he, like, had to consistently, like, fight against other people, you know, and just be, like, consistently faced with, you know, the idea of being let down. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, not only that, he just, and towards the end, he just said, I stopped it because I got tired of it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, after a while, he felt like he was running out his own clock. So,
right.
You know, and even though he gets, like, heavily criticized for making really terrible movies nowadays, mm-hmm. Which, you know, there's no denying the fact that he does, I still can't kind of blame him for, like, going and getting a paycheck, so.
Oh, yeah, no, I can understand that, especially, but, I mean, it is a shame, because the guy, I mean, well, he did his thing. It's kind of like Albert Brooks. Those guys back in the 70s and early 80s pulled off such brilliant stuff. The question is, I don't even think they could ever bring it back. Or be able to top that. And they just kind of went on and did their own thing.
Yeah.
So that is one thing to keep in mind. Now, in terms of you know, like I said, I mentioned about style. Is there anything that you don't like in the field of comedy? Obviously, Dane Cook. We know that.
Right, yeah. That's a given. You know, I don't want to, like, be to the point where I can't, like, communicate with people on, like, a certain visceral level.
Right.
I'm not looking, like, for right now, because I'm just, like, I'm still developing my voice. Like, I remember I read something, like, from Patton Oswalt where he said, you know, I realized, like, the first 5 years that I was doing this, nothing that I did in that, like, time span mattered. So, you know, I feel like I'm still trying to, like, develop my comedic voice, my through line, things like that. So I'm at, like, a really fledgling stage. So I don't really want to, like, be presumptuous and say, okay, well, this is what I can do and this is what I can't do. But
that's
at the
good.
Same time, I still kind of aspire to have, you know, a decent, you know, delivery, something that people can, you know, sympathize with, and something that just kind of, you know, at least, you know, catches people on certain levels, even if it's, like, I guess, you know, visceral or not, so...
Right. Now, I mean, for you, and as I mentioned, for me, because I enjoy the comedians that do have, like, a, you know, they discuss philosophy, they talk about stuff, would that be something you'd want to consider, or you want to do the more observational type of humor?
I wouldn't mind a mixture of observational and sociopolitical kind of stuff, because, mm-hmm. you know, eventually there's a point where comedy comes into, like, service of sociopolitical issues, where
right.
you can sit there and you can say, okay, well, let me make fun of this to the point where people are like, wait, that's really fucked up, let me actually be aware of this. That's something that, like, sounds really interesting to me, just because of the idea of, you know, comedy as activism, and that's one of the things that I've always kind of liked. It's like, you know, there's something that's always inherently funny to something that's really tragic.
Right.
You know, and you can kind of mind that. And even if it's like, even if you're making fun of the opposition's, you know, approach to it, you know, like, say, you know, it's like Republicans against Darfur or something like that. You
yeah.
know, something completely out of the blue like that. You can still say, okay, well, these guys are against people dying. And, you know, you can still kind of, like, mind that for whatever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, you know, cold-hearted. It's just
right.
like something that's more like, it's kind of like opening people's eyes to something.
Well, that's basically, wouldn't it be what The Daily Show and, say, The Colbert Report
something like
try
that.
To do?
Yeah, pretty much. But that, you know, mix it with something that's a little bit more day-to-day. So
Of course.
I think there's always a healthy medium.
I think also I got to hand it to anyone who does stand-up comedy for the fact, for one thing, you're exposing yourself. And a lot of comedians, you know, that's the kind of thing where, you know they're down on their luck and you're just watching them, you know, do the thing. You rarely get a comedian. It's like, you know, I had a great day at work today, yeah. And I just bought a solid gold house.
I drove my Lamborghini into this open mic tonight, and it was really nice. I got to open it up on the 405 freeway. But no, yeah, it's I think that, like, comedy is inherently born out of tragedies. So.
Right. Well, that's great. That's something. Now, for yourself, would you say this thing, you know, would you try to stick with stand-up, or would you also perhaps try to go into, you know, sketch comedy?
No, I would totally branch out. I would love to, because it's like, I've already got sketch ideas anyway. I haven't really, like, put them into fruition, but I'm still, like, I'm constantly, like, thinking on that level. It's like, okay, I wouldn't mind doing that. I wouldn't mind doing improv, you know. I don't want to, like, limit myself to one thing, because if it's, like, if I don't work out in one thing, like, say if I completely bomb and suck at stand-up, then, you know, I'd want to be able to move on to another medium, so...
Right, well, that's a good idea. I mean, the fact that you could branch out, because you could be in... The comedy field is so wide that, yes, some people do stand-up, but they're not necessarily sketch artists.
Right, yeah,
I mean, Tina Fey, I don't remember her ever doing stand-up at all. Same thing with Will Ferrell. They never did stand-up, they did sketch.
Right.
Which is a completely different thing.
They still blow it up, so...
Yes. Oh, yeah, I agree. I know, in fact, I think there was this podcast I tried listening to. It was the Upright Citizens Brigade podcast, which was about sketch comedy. Although it was a bit kind of dry for me, just because to me this was real comedy nerddom.
Yeah.
So it was like, they're talking about sketches I have never seen, compounded with the fact it's like these people aren't all that appealing to me, so it's just like, why do I even bother?
And that's the whole thing. It's like, when you're working with something like improv or sketch comedy, then it's like, it's based on, like, the chemistry of the people who are involved.
Oh, yes.
So it's mostly, like, involved in the real time of the sketch, and they're bouncing off of each other. So I can see how that really wouldn't translate to a podcast, but at the same time, if they're interacting, you would expect, you know, like, improv people to, like, have some sort of rapport. So,
right.
You know, it does seem kind of odd, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not doing the shows on the podcast. They're just talking about it, and sometimes they'll talk about the process, and it's just... It never seemed to be a very interesting thing. Once again, it seemed to be only... It wasn't something that, say, the layman could try and get into. Even in the comedy world, it is a world unto itself, and there's just techniques, and, you know, it's like, it's almost, if anything, it's like acting. There's just something about it that you can't necessarily put into words. To try and explain it would just be to just take too long.
Yeah.
But
you start dissecting it too much, and then you're like, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense, because it's like I spent too much time pulling it apart. Kind of
right.
Thing.
Now, as for yourself, is there any? Now, we obviously mentioned, there's the comedians that obviously it's pretty much you your ass is on the street if you say you like them. We obviously know what those are. But is there any popular comedians? You know, people that you say that a lot of people like, but you don't seem to enjoy. Is there anything like that?
Not necessarily. I've learned to appreciate them all in their own right. It's like it all depends on, like, their delivery, things like that. Their persona. I mean, there's like a couple of people. Like, there's this one guy who runs, like, this comedy boot camp, which is, like, it seems like kind of exploitative. I don't remember his name right offhand.
Well, you don't need to mention his name. I'm just talking about, saying, the well-known comedian field.
Well, apparently he's pretty well-known.
Oh, my God.
I had never heard of him before I heard of the comedy boot camp, which Doug Stanhope went and wrote this big, like, article railing against it. Mm. So, you can probably find that on Stanhope's website. But, no, there aren't really, like, any people that I can't really say that I don't enjoy on some level.
Okay. To me, and I, you know, I don't want to come off, you know, it. You know, me and obvious, we know are obvious, you know, people that we, you know, you have, there's no way you'd say you like them at all. But for me, I hate to say it, because unfortunately it involves female comedians. I'm not a fan of Janine Garofalo or Margaret Cho. I mean, to them, they have what they're doing. I understand, especially Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
But the way they come off, once again, this goes back to being bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're so bitter that it's almost like that, you know, they're a real downer, and it's like, why would I want to hang around listening to this?
Yeah.
And where they have a real big axe to grind.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it.
No, it's cool.
And then at the same time, I mean, I could say the same thing sometimes with Adam Carolla, because Carolla could, he knows what he's talking about, but sometimes when he goes on his rants, and this is the thing where it's so repetitive, it's like, you've done this already, move on. Or
yeah,
the guy has been railing against the left turn arrow light for the past at least 6 years now. He will not move on.
Yeah.
And I got a hand to the guy, because once again, that's a guy who came up from pretty much nothing, you know, out here in the valley.
Yeah, the man showing into that.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's got his own show, his own podcast, and he's got his own shows and all that. I think the only, let's see, I'm trying to think of anyone else. I'm just, I know there's, I think, what is it, Maria Bamford? I don't like her voice.
Yeah, and that's, like, part of her shtick, which is kind of funny, because it's like, you know, it works for her.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's the way she's built and all that. But it's like, well, I hate to say that, but
the
it's
first
like,
time that I listened to her, I didn't like her. But like, I watched the Comedians of Comedy documentary,
right?
And I fell in love with her. I was like, oh my god, she's hilarious, you know? Because I just kind of like picked up what she was doing, and you know, then I listened to the Mark Maron What the Fuck podcast.
That's a good show.
It's a really great podcast. I definitely recommend like anybody who's like interested in anything related to comedy, even though it's not like a directly funny podcast. Mm-hmm. It still deals with like a lot of the themes like related to comedy, and it's a fantastic. Just he breaks it down, and he does like a lot
of he does a great show just because also I had no idea he was originally from Air America.
Right.
And so he has that broadcaster type of you know, voice and technique, which is really good, which makes it a lot more entertaining.
And it even works out whenever he's like starts quizzing like Dane Cook and Carlos Mencia in the two like infamous episodes that he did. Mm-hmm. Where he like kind of called them out, and he was like, okay, well, you know, what do you think about your persona? But he wasn't like really pressing. He was just kind of like pulling the answers out of him more than anything. It was almost like, you know, comedy detective work, which is interesting.
Yes.
So. And I think like his experience with Air America helped him do that. Mm-hmm. So
now I remember talking to someone about this, talked to Xander from an earlier episode about acting. Now, speaking of Dane Cook and Carlos Mencia, for what it's worth, now, obviously, it's a little bit different now than it was, say, a few years ago, especially during between, I think, 2005 and 2007 when we had the Dane Cook run of films. Yeah. Does it ever bother you? Now, obviously, you're just started. You know, you don't have anything set in stone. Does it bother you when you see someone like that just, you know, making, you know, hand over fist with money, just supposedly being popular? Once again, it's a bit downplayed now, especially for Carlos Mencia. You know, I don't see him, like... Does anyone give a shit? No, I don't think so. So, Dane Cook, I know, still gets around. I remember seeing ads for him at the Greek when I went to see MGMT. Does that, or do you, like, you know, people say, I know Bobby Oliver's been in the business for a long time, or you hang around with, I guess, who've been in, you know, in the business for a long time who've not achieved that. Does it ever bother me? It's kind of like the classic thing at Family Guy, and I've said this before, where Brian is in Hollywood trying to sell his script, and that he can't believe that someone just sold Death Spares the Tiger, where they named the character, the main character, John Everyman. So does that sort of thing where, you know, you see that, or you see talented people, and they're struggling, and you get to see, this is what the people seem to like. It's like, you can't fucking believe it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's always going to grade on some level, but you always have to also account for the fact that lowest common denominator is going to win for a very long while. I mean, as far as Dane Cook goes, he was a young, attractive guy. He pandered to, like, a lot of, like, you know, college-age girls. I mean, he basically, like, ran the college circuit, and, you know, that's where he blew up. I mean, he kind of, like, appealed to that, you know, frat boy douchebag-ish kind of demographic, and he killed it. I mean, I can't say that he's not good at PR, because he is, but he's terrible at comedy. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you look at somebody, you know...
And I'm not going to lie, I did... When I saw his special, like, it must have been, like, 8 years ago, I laughed my ass off at the whole Burger King thing.
Right, but it was also impressive because he was one of the few people who had a really... He's very good at, like, delivery. Like, he's got a very spontaneous and, like, active delivery, but that's all he's got. It's like, he's really, like, in your face. And that apparently got him, like, a lot of credit. And I'm not about that. You know, I'd rather have content than delivery, but, you know, whatever. And even with Carlos Mencia, it's like that whole idea. It's like people like easy comedy, and or people like, you know, comedy that kind of, you know, panders to them in a way. Like the whole Jeff Dunham thing with him, you know, getting a fucking Comedy Central special, for Christ's sake. With his dumb goddamn racist puppets, you know. And it's like, are you serious? But at the same time, people like stuff that's safe for them.
Well, yeah, that pretty much sums up Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and even then, he's not, you know, who he claims to be. You've seen, like, there's been previous video of him, you know, in his actual, you know...
He's actually a very erudite gentleman, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, he's completely, like, going for the lowest, you know, the lowest rung. So.
Now, would you ever... I mean, this is a thing I've asked also to, not only to Xander, who's, you know, trying to make it in acting, but, you know, I've talked to other people, you know, who've been musicians. It's like, what if you had been proposed an offer? You know, this is the thing of, like, would you... You know, I mean, this is the classic sellout question, so to speak, where you could be, you know, you get your name out there, but you're doing this type of work... Or would you rather, like, I'm going to stick with my convictions, and I'm going to try and, you know, just, you know, it's truly for the art. I'm not trying to make a few bucks. Because obviously, anyone in comedy, especially, compared to everything else in the entertainment field, you're not going to be doing it for the money. This is clearly not that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not the late 80s when you had a brick, where any place you had a brick wall and a gray suit jacket with a piano key necktie, you could be ready to go.
Right.
I mean... This is probably as cutthroat as it gets, I imagine.
Right.
And, you know, would you, if you were faced with something like that, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, and I'm going to say, like, you know, 15 years down the line, it's like, I interviewed this guy, he said he wasn't going to sell out, look at him, I'm still in this fucking apartment, what am I doing wrong? At least by then, I'd like to think I've bought a couch.
Right,
so,
exactly. That would be nice.
But what would you think if you had been faced something like that, at least in your mind right now?
With something like what? Like
say someone proposed to you, you know, we want you to be in like this NBC sitcom where you play like a dumb hick jock. You know, it's not something you want to do. It's kind of like in and I admit I didn't watch the show, but I remember this distinctly from just reading about it, which is in Ricky Gervais's Extras, where Ricky Gervais's character Andy Millman, he gets a show. But it's playing, once again, as you said, the lowest common denominator thing. And in this case, he plays like this cafeteria worker in this wacky industrial plant where they have catchphrases and wigs and, you know, it's like he's gotten famous, but it's not for those reasons.
Yeah, it's like, what's
and now he's stuck as that guy, you know, with the catchphrase. And I don't know if he would ever consider something like that. You know,
I would, just for like the whole idea of like what opportunities it would open up for me afterward.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I look at it as like, even if it doesn't like branch out from that direct point, there could still be other like ancillary ways that it could work out. So
plus, you get some residuals.
You know, Patton Oswalt was on, you know, King of Queens for God knows how long, and nobody gives a fuck about King of Queens.
Only that, he wrote for Mad TV of all things.
Yeah, and
like,
so you know,
boy,
now he's killing. Now he's doing amazing stuff, and he's one of like the most impressive comedians. He's one of, you know, the people that I, you know, admire the most. And it's
you know, and he himself. I know people tend to label him as like the kind of geeky comedian. I mean,
yeah.
You know, for what it's worth. I mean, his thing about Star Wars is pretty hilarious. But I gotta say, he also has good You know, he was great in Big Fan.
Right.
I don't know if you saw him in that.
No, I did. I went to the LA Film Festival screening of it, and I actually met him afterward. And I just kind of shook his hand, and I said, you know, I said, so for anybody who's trying to like get into this sort of thing, you know, what would you recommend? And he says, you know what, write every day.
Yes.
And that's been the most consistent information that I've gotten from the point that he said it to, you know, this point, is, you know, you just have to write every day. It's like, so I do, like, the morning pages exercise where I write, like, all the shit that happened to me in my day, and, like I kind of, like, vent my spleen on the page,
mm-hmm.
and it still works out pretty well.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You can look at whatever you wrote down. You can mine humor from that. You can say, okay, well, this happened to me, but I can turn this into something even funnier, and at the same time, it's also kind of a catharsis thing, so it works mm-hmm. really well.
Oh, that's funny you mention that, because what is exactly the writing process for you? You mentioned, do you have a set routine? Is it more of, like, because to me, and I've read about this, is that, you know, when you try to sit down and you're trying to, like, let me write a joke, you're stuck there because you're thinking it's the right brain, left brain kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And or is it more of, you know, of an organic, it's like you're just walking around, it's like, hey, that's a good idea, I'm going to write that down. Now, you just mentioned that's you had a morning routine. Is that what they inscribed in this class, that you've got to, I mean, obviously you have to write somehow.
Yeah.
Or is it more of, you're just walking around, you have an idea, I'm going to put that down. Is it a bit of both, or is it?
It's definitely a bit of both. Like, the morning pages thing was just, recommended as, like, a basic idea, because it's, like, it's basically, like, you cleansing your mind to whatever, you know, you see during the day. So,
mm-hmm.
and then it's also recommended that you take, you know, a notebook around with you in your pocket, you know, and you write down whatever comes to you. Because, you know, her main concept is, like, the joke finds you. You don't find the joke.
Right.
And so, like, whenever you find whatever bit of humor and you mind that and you twist it or you do whatever you have to mold it into something better, or even if it's just funny on its own.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, it's that whole creative process. But the whole morning pages thing is also, it's simultaneously, you can find jokes from it, but at the same time, it's also to clear your mind so that you're more receptive mm-hmm. to whatever you can find.
It also would seem to me like it's a great way to get out there and do stuff. I gotta say, at least for this show, for example, I have to come up with something where, you know, otherwise it's going to be a lot of dead air about basically how life blows. So yeah. I got to get out there and just walk around and just do something.
Exactly.
And to me, that probably would apply the same way. I would say, and once again, and it goes back to the style you're trying to go for. Do you ever try to write down a joke or something where you say, you know what, that's not quite the kind of thing I'm going for? Or is it going to be, you know, where you know, I guess you would say, you get yourself into a what's the deal with airline food kind of joke. And it's like, you know what, I'm kind of ripping off Seinfeld here. I think I'm going to go ahead
yeah.
and pocket, you know, get rid of this one. I have you gone through stuff like that?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's a whole, like, shotgun method thing, which that carries over to the whole idea of writing anyway. I mean, you can mm-hmm. write, like, a whole bunch of shit, but, you know, whether it's comedy, whether it's, like, short stories, whether it's poetry, you can write a bunch of stuff, and, you know, there's only a certain amount of stuff that's going to work and a certain amount of stuff that's not going to work. So, mm-hmm. you know, you just kind of separate the wheat from the chaff and you're okay, but there's definitely, like, a lot of jokes that I have right now that I don't like, but at the same time, they work for now, so I'm going to kind of, like, ride them as long as I can, and then I'm just going to, like, ditch that horse and leave it for Alpo later.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's just, you know, you kind of figure out what's expendable and what's not. I mean, if there's something, like, bears improvement, then you can work on that. So it's constantly, like, it's a growing process for sure. And another thing that helps is, like, getting together with more comedic-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've gotten together in a couple of, like, pseudo-writing sessions with other, you know, comics that I've met actually through the class. And, you know, we've worked on jokes and stuff like that. We've had a really good collaborative process where, you know, I take one simple thing and they, like, throw stuff onto it and I throw stuff onto theirs. and it builds into a better thing. So we're just kind of like adding tags onto each other's jokes, and you know,
oh, that
works out really well.
That definitely sounds like the classic, you know, writer's room.
Yeah,
kind of
it's
thing.
It's a nice rapport because I mean, you build, you know, things with people who you appreciate and who you know are funny. So you take their words for, you know, way more, you know, importance than you normally would.
Oh yeah, and it also, I mean, it kind of reminds me of there was recently this big coffee table book on the National Lampoon magazine. And they talk about how in the 70s, that place was humming like no one's business. And
yeah.
Just the stuff they came up with. I mean, I got to say, once again, it's another thing I really like, where even if you have a stupid joke, that if it's backed with incredible intelligence, Monty Python was great at this, because they were all from friggin' Oxford and Cambridge. So the fact that if they did a poop joke, it was the most brilliant poop joke you ever saw in your life.
Yeah, the best poop joke you ever heard, yeah.
Yes, most intelligent poop joke you ever heard in your life. And
I mean, they could probably even make rape jokes funny if they tried. So.
Well, I mean, there's always the classic George Carlin thing about how, you know, how could you make rape funny? And then they, you know, it's Porky Pig raping Elmer Fudd.
Right.
So, I mean, it's I like I said, to me, if you're able to pull stuff off like that, and like I said, that goes back to Louis C.K., where it's not necessarily gut-busting hilarious, but he does raise an interesting point that it's just really hard to talk about. And he's actually, I mean, he's getting laughs in the room now. Obviously that could be out of nervousness, but he's still going after stuff where, and once again, it's not taken in a very abrasive manner. For example, I once tried to watch a documentary on Sam Kennison, and there is, especially in his earlier days, obviously he was screaming then.
Yeah.
The stuff he talks about women, I mean, obviously, I believe he got fucked over a lot.
Yeah,
he was
incredibly misogynist. I mean,
and I mean, it's like, holy shit, this is some harsh stuff. I mean, and I, you know, you roll with what you can got. But sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to go down that far.
Yeah, it gets a little heavy. I mean, he was definitely, you know, he had his point in that time in stand-up, but, you know, he belonged there, I kind of want to say, because he was kind of like a semi-rock star-ish comedian.
Yes.
But at the same time, he was very abrasive, and he did kind of have his little, oh, kind of thing.
Yes.
You know? And
it was also the era of Andrew Dice Clay, so what does that tell you?
Right.
Apparently, apparently
so,
in the late 80s.
Like, it wasn't like they were, like, dying for anybody who was, like, you know, had a really prescient view on comedy. They were just like, okay, let's take whatever.
But there was definitely that late 80s thing where it was very, like, a lot of screaming, very misogynist. It's kind of weird. You could actually nail down the eras in comedy. And
you can, yeah.
It's weird that is. And I think in the 90s you could basically, you know, if you had a kind of a middle-of-the-road way of doing about it, you could get yourself a series. Although, I mean, I had read that, you know, Drew Carey and even Tim Allen used to, you know, have some filthy stuff, especially Drew Carey.
Yeah, I mean, and even, you know, what's his name from Full House? Bob Saget.
Oh, yeah, Bob Saget.
Yeah, he did a recent one, another What the Fuck podcast with Mark Maron.
Yeah.
And he was really, you know, straightforward, and he had, like, a lot of obscene stuff, and he was talking about how, you know, he had to kind of, like, balance himself being, like, the, oh, I'm the family, you know, guy kind of thing with his actual stand-up, which is pretty vulgar.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of, you know, there's always, like, a lot of, like, things in balance.
It's still crazy to think about that, because I think a lot of people still don't know that. I remember first learning about that from Stern.
Yeah.
About Bob Saget, and the fact that Bob Saget, I mean, this was before he even got hired. He was known as a very blue, filthy comedian.
Yeah.
And the fact that he got this ultra-wholesome TV show, I guess, I don't know if it was because of his looks. I don't remember. I haven't seen the E! True Hollywood story about him in some time, but it's amazing to even think about that a guy like that would have pulled something off. To put it, I think, on par is like as if Bill Hicks, if he had been alive at the time, had gotten a Home Improvement.
Yeah,
and it was about
really.
And Bill Hicks was playing a family guy, a family dad.
Here come the cops!
Oh. and all that stuff. It's amazing just to think about that. But and the fact that, thankfully, Dave Coulier never took off. So,
yeah.
Oh, my God. And I have to say, I mean, what's your opinion about especially comedians that really put a niche where they do, I mean, some of them do impressions. I don't know if that's still the way it is. I mean, that used to be like...
There's still like quite a few impressionists.
Okay, I mean, but there can't be anyone doing prop comedy. I hope there is.
Yeah, there probably is. I haven't seen
it. Oh, my God.
Yet, but, you know, I wouldn't put that past anyone because the whole thing with like comedy is that like it seems like attract people who want attention inherently, but they might be crazy as fuck and they might still want attention. So
Gallagher, for example.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that guy's a nutcase. It's like when you read like his past few like interviews on the AV Club.
Oh yeah,
it's like he's completely like he's psychotic,
totally
like,
insane,
tea partier, like nuts. And
yeah,
he's like, holy fuck, is this guy serious? And he's like, it's all a conspiracy, and it's like I'm racist.
Yeah.
And after a while, you're just like, wow, you were supposed to be in comedy, but you're really a tragic
Well, not
person.
Only that, if you ever watched the specials, I mean, everyone remembers Gallagher smashing fruit, but you try to watch his routines, they were god-awful.
No,
as a young kid, you think it's funny as shit, but when you think of, I mean, Dave Chappelle did it best with Black Gallagher, where he's like making these like these not even joke jokes, and it was like, wow, he really nailed it. And I have to say, I mean, I was recently rewatching some of the old episodes of Chappelle's Show. It's amazing how brilliant that was. Now yeah, that yeah, guy,
he really killed it.
I mean, he basically killed himself doing it. I mean, ultimately, you know, from what I know, he probably made the right move. He just couldn't manage that load anymore, and he didn't want to just. You just up and quit.
I remember reading a quote where he was saying something to the effect of, you know, I remember doing a few skits and I realized that the right people weren't laughing anymore.
Mm.
So I think it was more like there was like a degree of ironic detachment from his, you know, brand of lampooning race and humor and things like that. Mm-hmm. And people were starting to laugh for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
And I think that was basically like that the whole gist of his quote on that was that, you know, everybody was laughing, but they were laughing for the wrong reason. Like, I remember the, you know, the nigger family sketch.
Oh, yes.
You know, a nigger loves his pork, all that stuff. And you're just like, you know, and people are sitting there laughing, but it's like, wait, but that's still kind of terrible. I mean, I was watching that, and I felt like all this, like, white liberal guilt. I'm like, wait, I'm laughing at this, but I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm still wondering if I didn't kind of miss the point. So, you know.
And I have to hand it to him. To me, that what he had done was right up there with Monty Python, just in terms of the sheer brilliance.
It was prescient, and it hit at the right point in the right time. It just like it was like within the cultural moment, the kind of zeitgeist to where it worked out. So, mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's got his money. You know, he's got his various Ohio houses.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, he like just shows up at random comedy clubs and will talk for hours on end. I don't know how anyone could do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, literally, it must be, because I suppose he's, like, doing four-hour sets. He must consider, I mean, either that or he's just sitting around talking.
Yeah. I mean, and it's all, that's one of the bigger things, too. Like, that's one of the things that they talk about in a couple of the podcasts about Mencia on the What the Fuck podcast, is mm-hmm. that, you know, he would go on, like, on stage, and he would go, you know, to an open mic or whatever, and he would run the light. And he'd go on and he'd, like, start doing, you know, sets, but he would go over, like, where the headliner who was scheduled to go would be set. So that's one thing that I worry about, like, you know, there's a degree of, like, being in stand-up comedy where you don't want to be an asshole. You want to be, like,
right.
you know, deferential and respectful to other comics.
But at the same time, it's entertainment, and everyone's
yeah,
an
and
asshole.
Then you wonder, okay, well, like, how much should I milk my own, you know, rising star kind of thing? But I would never want to get to that point where I have to, like, quantify that, where I
yes.
just say, okay, well, you know, let me just be a dick for these reasons, because that sounds terrible. That's like an awful
thing. And I just said, I know there's a lot of, you know, especially in comedy, there's a lot of assholes, but then there are guys there that I've heard that, you know, are you know, nice
keep,
guys,
yeah, they keep
and
their
they
heads
do great
down,
work.
They stay working, and they make an honest living.
One of those guys, I love him for what he does, is Brian Regan.
Yeah.
To me, I love Brian Regan, and I've said this before, is like, is if Will Ferrell did stand up, it'd be like Brian Regan. To me, Brian Regan has the best idiot guy voice in the business. And I have one of his albums. I really enjoy his stuff. I mean, it's a different... To me, if you like Jim Gaffigan, mm-hmm. you're going to like Brian Regan.
Right.
Much in the same way... Christ, I was about to try to run something with Todd Barry, but, oh man, that guy's just brilliant. But, I don't know. I can't think of...
He's still pals around like Louis C.K.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, Todd Barry, that's his delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It's such greatness. And I still can't believe that he's actually in The Wrestler. It's just one of those odd castings where he's just there.
You're like, what?
And he's playing the asshole supermarket manager.
Yeah.
That great scene where Mickey Rourke walks into the office and he's looking at porn. He's like, will you come walk close the door and walk back in, please?
Yeah.
All right, come back in. So...
It's right before he runs his finger through the...
Yeah, where he jams his hand in the car. And when I saw that scene, I was like, oh my God, he's going to do it, isn't he? Oh!
Because
he just like, jam!
He's
oh!
Randy the Ram! Oh!
And the... I don't know if you were there for that. Speaking of Randy the Ram, the Arclight over here actually had that costume.
No, I missed it.
You could actually see the bloodstains in the pants.
Jesus Christ.
And you could see how beaten in that those clothes were. But...
Yeah, I would have loved to see that in theater.
No, it was great. Although to me that was a one and done. To me it's one of those movies where you liked it for the performance. I mean, Mickey Rourke was great, and it's to me there's this great scene in the beginning where he's talking about where the doctor's telling him he can't wrestle again. And the way he looks at that doctor, I was getting a little misty.
Totally wounded, yeah.
Oh yeah, just that look at him. Now, I mean, there's a guy that just, you know, fucked it all up, and I mean,
yeah.
And I think he's genuinely nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So. And then to me, especially in the 80s, he seemed to just be talking like Bruce Willis the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where you got to see Year of the Dragon, which is a ridiculous
Michael
movie.
Michael Cimino.
Yeah, Michael Cimino's movie before, as Edgar Wright said, he turned into a lady. And, although he turned into a lady, I think, sometime in about 10 years ago or something like that. But anyway, it's crazy to see something like that. Because to me, I think for anyone who's famous, there's one or two ways to go about it. I think either you have your time... You move on. You say, that's it. I've gone out on a high note. or you try to be steady, but you're obviously not going to have a hit out of the park every time. I guess I'd call that Tom Hanks, but it's really sad where you see someone just like in that decline. It's like, I mean, yeah, we got their old stuff, but it's like, God damn, it's just really, there's pissing all over that. You
It's like when it's like a general decline. I mean, you know, like Neil Young said, it's better to burn out than to fade away. So it's like when you start applying that to an actual, you know, showbiz kind of thing, it's like, do you wonder if you just like should just like keep plugging away at it and see what works and what doesn't, or should you just like gracefully bow out?
I mean, it depends on what you want to do. I think if they, you know, as I say, if you're left where they basically want, they wish there was another one, whatever, you know, album, you know, movie, you know, book. I mean, that's something.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a loss, but at the same time, would the material would have been good? I don't know. The reason I bring that up, there's actually a cool article in this week's AV Club about that, you know, of who you would have asked to have one more thing. Some people talk about...
Oh, yeah, that was the one that they featured on Friday, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, and they talk about, like, some people wanted, like, another Elliott Smith album.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I never listened to his stuff, but I imagine it was very depressing.
It was incredibly depressing, but he was an amazing musician. It was just, like, when you listen to it, you get, like, this deep feeling of melancholy, and you're like, oh, my God, I can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah, I know. If I lived... This would be... My life would be a Gus Van Sant movie right now if I was in Portland, and I'm going to go ahead and throw this rope out, you know, through the rafters and, you know, just, you know, say goodbye. But, I don't know. That was a great thing, and I can't remember what else. I mean, there's a lot of literary stuff, which I mean, I have not read. Like, I know a lot of people are fans of David Foster Wallace. And
yeah, I am. I am myself. You know, I like the guy a lot. I'm still working. I'm still plugging my way through Infinite Jest, but I love like all of his essays. I love like his, you know, his short stories. He's an incredible author. I wouldn't mind seeing more from him. But at the same time, I think he was also kind of stagnating at the point where he was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, considering that the last novel they're going to be coming to publish is about, like, IRS agents and the Pale King. It sounds, you know, but that was what he was also really good at. He was also really good at, like, capturing the minutiae of certain things.
Right.
And, like, writing things out. And I think, like, going back to comedy, that's one of the things that I have trouble, like, working with is, like, because I'm used to, like, basically just, like, writing, like, short story kind of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, narrative writing. And I'm not used to making jokes where you have to, it's all about the economy of words, you know. Whereas
right.
in writing, you try to be as, like, flourish, you know, as flowery as you can.
Yeah, no, and it's funny you mentioned the economy of words, because obviously there were comedians that were great at, you know, at wordplay. Stephen Wright.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I'll even say Dimitri Martin. It's the kind of thing where you're, like, the stuff they say, it's like, why the hell didn't I think of that? But at the same time, you were never thinking of that, but it's so simple, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's
Zach Galifianakis it's even did
absurdism,
that.
Absurdism,
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and, you know, even as I said, Zach Galifianakis even did that. Although, I mean, well, he's got his thing. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's
always done it. Although, there's actually some footage of him beardless, if you can believe it.
Yeah, yeah. And there was also the Purple Onion Club or whatever, which I haven't had a chance to see yet.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's like, it's a whole bunch of footage like him going out at this like college club and bombing. And just like, and it's also interspliced with like bits of like about his life and stuff like that. So
right, and then he's got his supposed twin brother Seth.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And to me though, I mean, I know some people enjoy awkward humor. To see someone bombing like that is like that's just brutal. I mean, it's
It's one of my biggest fears, but it's like it's one of those things that you have to deal with.
Right.
So, you know,
I mean, it's gonna happen. I mean,
it's
ultimately.
Inherent to the process.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's inevitable. I mean, I hate to say it, and you don't want to go through it. Because it puts everything that you've got into question, but at the same time, how are you going to learn? I, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, if you're successful, you're going to stick with what you got. I mean, that's the thing. It's the great, you know, like musicians talk about this all the time. We had this great album. Now the record company wants to make a second album that was just like the first. It's like, but at the same
right.
time, your artistic side is like, well, I want to do something different. And then that's how Neil Young made an electronica album.
Right. Yeah.
So. It's that great tug of war. I think for anyone that really cares, they're faced with that a lot. Some people, they don't give a shit. They're going to do it for the money. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I'm in it for the money. Morgan Freeman says that all the time, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's phoning it in, I think.
No. And he does, like, really well on his own, so...
Yeah.
But there is, like, there's a degree of naivete in, like, the whole concept of stand-up where... I've heard it mentioned before where people come in and they're like, okay, well, if I haven't made it in like 2 months, then
right.
I give up. And it's like, are you shitting me? It takes like way more than that just to try it.
Now, what's your view? Because speaking of other comics, I'm not exactly a fan of. What's your view on Sarah Silverman?
Sarah Silverman, I like her a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think she's
okay.
Very funny. You know, and I enjoyed her show.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just, I like the whole concept of there being more female comedians who are way more palatable because I think that like a lot of female comedians get like short strips.
That's true. That's
true. They end up being like shoved into a niche because, you know, they're like being told, okay, well, you have to be like manly to a certain extent to be funny.
Right.
And there's not like a lot of space with, you know, woman humor. I mean, I've seen, you know, I've been in shows where people have walked out when female comedians walked on stage. And that's terrible.
Yeah,
it's
it
like,
is.
Well, it's like, okay, well, all of a sudden they're like, way less you're worth. It's like, oh, I'm going to go have a cigarette now because this broad's on stage.
Right.
It's like, and there's a lot of women out there who are really, really, really incredibly funny. So mm-hmm. I hate, like, meeting women who are like that, and they're hilarious, and yet people still, like, will back out on them. Or they'll go, like, say, oh, well, you're a woman, you're not supposed to be funny.
Right. So. No, and that's terrible. It's you know, basically what Jerry Lewis said, you know, 15 years ago, I think, or something like that. But I hate to say it. I mean, I wish I had some female comics on my mind that it's like, he's, you know, really funny. It's just, I mean, I've only mentioned like three or four names. I know there's right. tons more, but yeah. it's just, I'm just blanking out like a son of a bitch on that. So, I mean, I know at some point Joan Rivers was funny, but
right, yeah.
that was before either of us were alive. So,
yeah.
Although I heard Ellen DeGeneres was actually great as doing stand-up, and I think I've seen bits and pieces, and she seemed to be good, but I've never actually watched a special of hers, so I
yeah,
have
which
no
is
kind of
telling, because, I mean, there's not really a place for them if you haven't really heard much about them. So mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, you know, we're lucky to have heard the women that we have heard of, because they've been, you know, a little bit more prominent in, like, trying to get forward. And
that's the thing. We're yeah. talking about stand-up. That doesn't mean necessarily that there are some women great in just comedy in the genre
overall.
Yeah,
I mean, like you mentioned Tina Fey earlier.
Yeah, right.
She's hilarious.
Or Amy Poehler. That's sketch artist. Yeah. And that's just a different field altogether.
Of course.
For what it's worth. And they are
great. But at the same time, they're still funny women. So.
Oh, yes. And, you know, even on Arrested Development, Portia de Rossi was fantastic.
Okay, yeah.
And, yeah. Even the, God, I forgot the name, the one who played the mom, and then even, I'm blanking out.
I can't remember her name.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, you know, sitcoms and things like that, you know, it's really, there's you know, definite possibility. Now, I guess, you know, we'll definitely get our, selves moving on in a bit, but what's your view on, say, on Judd Apatow's kind of thing? Are you a big fan, you know, some people aren't a fan of his. I mean, there was some backlash, because, I mean, he was going for a good 2-3 years. And then he took a break. That's all he did, because I think people were getting tired of it. What's your view on him? Is there anything in particular?
I like all of his stuff. I've liked everything that I've seen of his so far. I mean, okay. Freaks and Geeks, I've just started catching up on that.
Oh, wow.
I was way behind on that, and then someone lent me the box set. And so I started catching up
on
that.
Isn't that a great show? It really is.
Yeah, it was impressive. So, you know, it was hilarious for the time.
Interesting bit of trivia. That area obviously is not Michigan. I lived in that area that the show was filmed in for about 2 years. Now, this was after they had wrapped, but I recognized, like, everything. It was like, that park is next to the high school I went to. They actually did the band in my high school. I recognized that diner, that bowling alley, that mall.
Nice.
And, it's something to come across, something like that. But I've said this before. It's just the fact that Freaks and Geeks is probably the best show about teenagers out there. Although the one hang-up I have with that show... And I give him props for the fact this is something you've never seen depicted on, especially in regular television, is Busy Phillips' character, which is the teenage, you know, badass girl who's, you know, the way she is and, you know, is very coming from a hard scrabble life. You've never seen that depicted. I just didn't like Busy Phillips.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I like that idea of that character. That was really good.
Yeah, 'cause it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a lot of tragedy in mind from that. I mean, you know, somebody who's like a bully, but you go and you look and it's like, okay,
especially a female bully.
Yeah.
You never see that, actually.
Yeah.
And then she shows up on Undeclared, which is all right. Different kind of show.
I've not seen Undeclared, and I haven't seen Funny People yet, but I've seen like all this other stuff, and I enjoyed it.
So. Yes, I have to say, I, in terms of, I don't know which one would be my favorite. I love The 4-Year-Old Virgin. I thought that was great.
Hilarious.
Knocked Up was, I enjoyed that too. I don't know why some people retaliated against that, but although I will say Jason Segel looked exactly like the MILF Hunter in that movie. It was pitch perfect. Although because, I mean, Seth Rogen was in everything for about a couple of years. Some people got tired of him, but he was pretty good. I think he just got a little bit overexposed. I mean, did you see Observe and Report?
I did. I actually did a DVD review.
That was good. But that movie's an acquired taste.
Yeah, and it's a Jody Hill movie, and, like, of course, he's going on to do Eastbound and Down now.
That show is great.
Yeah, it's really, like... cold-hearted. So
it is.
There's a lot of humor there that doesn't work for a lot of people.
It's very mean-spirited. I mean, because I saw Foot Fist Way, which I thought was all right. I mean, obviously it was a first-time effort. I mean, there were some good moments.
I mean, but when you look at it, it's like almost like the Danny McBride kind of carried it.
Well, I mean, Danny McBride has basically played the same kind of guy, but he's damn good at it, and you know, we love him so far.
Yeah,
I mean, you saw a trailer for Your Highness. Holy shit, is that fantastic!
I did not see that trailer yet.
Oh, you gotta see that.
Okay,
that trailer. Oh, man,
everybody keeps throwing it around. I'm like, oh, I guess.
Well, that's because Natalie Portman shows her ass in the trailer.
Well, then I'm definitely going to have to watch it.
Yes, right, yes. I know our friend, our respective friend Ari will not be able to leave. They're not going to be able to, he's not going to be able to walk because his genitals are going to fall clean off from overuse. And between this and Black Swan, he's never going to be able to leave the theater.
Yeah,
it'll
be terrible.
But,
we love you, Ari.
But yeah, Observer Report, I mean, it's crazy that movie ever got off the ground. And once again, it's very acquired. I mean, I was on the fence with that movie until the last scene.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we should go into spoilers on that.
Place, yeah.
But
no, I agree with you on that.
That scene at the end saved the movie for me. Otherwise, if that thing had not occurred, I would have been like, this movie is a mess.
Yeah, it's delusional bullshit.
Yes. And it's tough. I mean, you're right. Jody Hill, and he's damn good. It's that very mean-spirited humor, and it's good. But it, once again, it's very... It takes some time to get used to it, mm-hmm. and it could be easily can turn off a person.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not palatable at all.
No.
I mean, the first couple of times I watched it, it took me a little while to get what he was doing, but then I realized it, and I was like, okay, this is funny, because, you know, I had to, like, kind of gear myself into that mindset where I was saying, okay, now I understand what he's doing.
Right. It kind of reminded me, obviously, to me, Observer Report, I don't know if you ever saw Martin Scorsese's King of Comedy.
No, I didn't.
You've got to see that. To me, it is the exact same vibe.
Okay.
Where it is not necessarily...
It's De Niro, right?
It's De Niro playing Rupert Pupkin, and he kidnaps Jerry Lewis. And it's not necessarily gut-busting hilarious. It's great. It's unsettling because Sandra Bernhardt's in it, and that's kind of hard to look at. But
it's awful enough.
Especially when there's a scene where she's trying to make out Jerry Lewis, and you want to run away screaming. But to me, it's the same kind of vibe. And it's a great vibe. It challenges you. And it's not necessarily you're gonna laugh your ass off here because you're not, but it's great, and that's what to me that's what its lineage comes from is definitely the King of Comedy. And like I said, from that ending, Observer Report, had that not been there, I would have not recommended that movie or even liked it. But that ending saved the goddamn movie. Plus, I love their cover of Where Is My Mind.
Yeah, that was actually pretty impressive.
Yes, and I got to hand it to Seth Rogen, the fact that was against type. The fact he's basically playing a psychopath. And, well, we could say the Green Hornet's never going to take off. And what's your view on the fact he lost the weight? Was that a good move for him or not?
I think it was a good move for him.
Okay.
I mean, I'm always, like, supportive of that no matter what. And it's good to, like, not be shoved in the idea of being the fat comedian.
Right.
Because that can always, like, take a turn for the worse.
Yes.
And at the same time, you want to be recognized for your talent, regardless of whatever, you know, your body shape is. So.
But Danny McBride is not going to lose the weight.
But he probably doesn't give a fuck anyway, because he's killing it what he's doing right now.
Yes.
So.
And he's amazing. Because, once again, anyone who's not watched Eastbound and Down,
yeah,
you gotta see it. And the fact they're only gonna do 3 seasons,
I
6 episodes
a shot.
I
haven't caught up with any of the second season yet.
Well, I don't have cable, so I gotta wait till the DVD comes out. But the fact that he's in Mexico, shit sells itself.
I'm like, all right, yeah, him in Mexico, I'm fine with that.
Yes, and the fact that if you're kind of a large individual of the persuasion and you got curly hair, that is an instant costume right there to go as Kenny Powers. All you gotta do is throw on a baseball outfit, maybe watch what you say with the racist shit. I think you'll be all right.
You'll be set.
Because it's better to do that than Peter Griffin. Family Guy.
Although
God
there are plenty
us.
Of people who could totally pass for Peter Griffin, which is depressing enough in itself.
Well, that's America for you. And, you know, that's just unfortunately the way the country is. I mean, you go to a Vegas buffet.
Yeah.
See America right there.
I haven't been to Vegas yet.
Oh, there's nothing to see there. Believe me, I know.
That's what I've heard, but everybody still keeps telling me to go.
Well, you know, you go there for the sake of going there.
It's going to be like a sociological thing for me.
Yeah.
I think.
I agree. Because to me, you go there because if you've never been, you go there. To me, some people love going to Vegas. I've been there a few times. It's there's a real tackiness to it.
Yeah.
And it's
it's
weird that people, especially in the movies, portray Vegas as this classy place, you know. It's a world-class city.
Yeah, because it's, like, cheap and gaudy. You're like,
it is. It, especially in the daytime when it looks like shit. So, at night, it's all right. I mean, The Hangover actually was okay with depicting the city that way. But,
cool.
Yeah, there's an overall tackiness that is not all that, you know, pleasing to the eye. It's basically like going to the Florida, you know, being in Florida. Now, you've been in the South. I don't know if you've been to Florida. I know many people in the South.
I haven't been to Florida, no.
Oh, you have been?
No.
Okay. Because I had heard many people in the South don't even consider Florida to be part of the South.
No, not really. But it's also, you know, the whole, like, Texas thing. We consider Texas to be like a fucking continent on its own. So.
Well, yeah. That's
it's
its own attitude.
You know, state pride kind of thing, which
is
weird.
That's the thing. No one ever, I mean, got to give it to this, I don't know what that high-pitched sound is. We may be being invaded right now, but I don't know what it is, but could be those damn commies. So
probably is.
Hopefully it's not showing up. But in any case, speaking of Texas, we'll go into this a little bit, and then, you know, we'll get going, as they say. Now, you came from East Texas. Now, what was the major city you were nearby?
Dallas, which is about 70 miles north west of us.
So. Northwest. Oh, okay. So it's northeast Texas, right up in there. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to envision it.
We're like southeast.
Yeah, near Arkansas.
No, we're closer to the Louisiana border than we were Arkansas.
So. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it wasn't too bad. I mean, you know, it was just when you're growing up in like a really like secluded area like that where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the depressing like whole town's being taken over by Walmart and shit like that.
Right.
You know, and it's like they kind of like thrive on the lack of education and, you know, Republican politics, things like that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a lot of like things that aren't really, you know, conducive, but they're inherently hilarious to some extent.
In a tragic way. I mean,
yeah, of course.
I'll leave that to you because I don't want to be, you know, because a lot of, you know, the guy from the outsider, I remember.
No, it's horrible, but at the same time, it's like I've been reading this book called Methland, and it's talking about, like, the decline of, like, a small town based on, like, the prevalence of meth. And that's
right.
been, like, a big thing in my hometown, like, over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone back and I've seen, like, how that's worked and how, like, I've seen people who I knew who are now, like, tweakers and stuff like that. And you look at something like that, you're just like, that's so goddamn tragic. Let me look back and see what's actually funny so that I can, like, kind of.
Right.
break that cycle of, oh my god, this is horrible. So,
no, I understand. I mean, I just know for me, you know, when the outsider, you know, the guy from, you know, the northeastern liberal, comes in, basically rags on the South. I gotta hand it, once again, Todd Berry had a joke about this, and then also Louis C.K., once again, going back to him, in his show, he goes to the South.
Yeah, to Birmingham.
And he's like, you know, he's all wigged out, and, you know, he actually, you know, it's a great it's probably, I think, one of his best episodes in the first series. Especially once again how it ends, I really enjoyed it. But the fact that the, you know, the stereotypes, a lot of the usual stuff is turned on its head. Basically, it goes away from everything Jeff Foxworthy would talk about. So,
Right.
And I got to hand to him the fact. I mean, that guy was an engineer for IBM. He found his niche. He got his routine and he ran with it.
And he did, and he made pretty good money at it. I mean, you know, everybody thought he was funny way back in the day.
Oh yeah.
So, all being hicks, everybody's like, "Oh, this is funny," and it's like, "All right, well, you know." It is, but at the same point, where does it stop being funny and start being tragic?
Yes.
Like, you know, you did just mow your lawn and found a long-dead relative. It's like, you know, what the fuck are you going to do from that point?
Right.
Yeah,
and it's, I mean, although the funny thing is to say that rednecks exist in every state.
Of course,
I mean, we got that in this state. You know, if you drive east enough into San Bernardino, Riverside County, you're set to...
You know, the Inland Empire. You're set with them.
Oh, and heaven forbid you go down to Imperial County, which is east of San Diego, which is a living hellhole. But I have to go back to saying the Texas. I mean, what made you decide to say to come here to Los Angeles and rather than just stay, you know, go to one of the big cities in Texas?
Well, it was more like a whole sort of circumstance thing with my ex, things like that. So I ended up coming out here and... you know, we were together for a while, and then we broke up. And,
I understand.
So I ended up, like, you know, moving out and doing my own thing, and that was when I decided to jump into comedy. So it was just like, it was being with her and then getting established out here and saying, okay, well, if I go back to Texas, there's not going to really be anything there.
Right.
I've already got a job. I'm already set here. Why not just stay here?
Right, because, so. I mean, they talk a lot about Austin.
Right.
Now,
right.
is that even worse? I've heard from some very conflicting views that it ain't exactly... you know, hot shit, as they say.
Austin is very cool. I like Austin a lot. I liked it a lot when I went there when I was a kid. So, you know, and I've heard that it's only gotten even better, but I kind of like, I gravitate toward that sort of thing anyway because it's like, it's the one kind of weird, you know, hippie-ish bastion in like this whole surrounding of, you know, red state kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I am completely like for it being there and existing and them doing their own thing. And I'm glad it's become way more hip because I think that that whole area is gorgeous anyway. Like, the whole area of, like...
Is that the hill country, as they say?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And, like, Bandera, places like that. Everything is gorgeous around there. Like, San Antonio kind of sucks because it's just, like, it's kind of, like, dismal and it's, like, a lot of poverty and, you know... But at the same time, there's still, like, a lot of gorgeous territory around
right.
there.
Right. Now, what about, say, the other cities? I only ask because I worked with, I worked with some people in Dallas and Amarillo.
Dallas is
a big city, is what it is.
Yeah, it's gotten really, like, hyper-urbanized over, like, the past... I remember the last time I was trying to drive through there to get to my hometown, and I was having a nervous breakdown. It's like, I don't fathom how drivers here could be, you know, less awful than Dallas drivers, but they were. And I think it's just the fact that we don't have anywhere to go here, so we can't drive crazy, but everybody in Dallas just has room to go.
Because it's all wide roads, nothing.
Yeah, everybody's fucking stuck.
It's all sprawled out.
Yeah, everybody's going crazy. So, and Houston is all right. I haven't been there in a long time, but, I enjoyed it when I was there.
Now, I only saw this because I watched The Legend of Billy Jean. How was Corpus Christi?
I've never been there, actually.
Okay. So, yeah. And I imagine El Paso is a living hellhole.
It sucks. I went to the Greyhound station there a couple of times, and that was about it. That was all I wanted to see of it. It's like, oh my God.
It's the Fresno of Texas.
It is the Fresno of Texas.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would want to live there.
They usually don't have a choice.
God help you. God. Yeah. I have to say, I was born in this town. I'm probably not going to go anywhere because I had no reason to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
There's a lot worse places to go, though.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, the funny thing is for me, my family came from New York, and then my dad, my mother used to joke it was because he used to watch Chips. He wanted to come here, and then, you know, we were the only part of the family to branch out. Otherwise, the rest of the family is all in New York City and Long Island, which is not too shabby.
No, not at all.
But it's funny to have that. For me, like I said, there's not really been a case where I could just pack my shit up and go. For one thing, I have to admit, because for one, I didn't come from a middle of nowhere town.
Yeah.
I didn't have any issue where I was, you know, getting harassed, anything like that. I was here in the valley.
Yeah.
As depicted in the famed movie Valley Girl. But in any case, which is now on Instaview, if you can believe it. But to me, it's always, you know, I've never saw of like where you could just grab your stuff and go. Like, I've known people that would form a rag on this town. For one, I never gave a shit, so I was like, go ahead, I know the traffic blows.
Yeah.
But I admit, I don't have anywhere else to, you know, where else would I go? A lot of people can seem to do that. I don't know how they do it, especially if they don't have any network where they're going, where it's like, I'm just going to pack my shit and just show up with no job.
Yeah, and so, just hope for like everything to shake out. That's what a lot of people do when they move here, too.
I mean, yeah, especially in this town. And I think, like I said, if you come from a place where you got nothing going on, you have no choice, one as well. But when you're in a place like this, I'm like, where else do I go? And it's like, wherever I go, there's going to be snow. How do I deal with that?
Yeah, it's going to suck, yeah.
Snow? What is snow? Even though if you drive a good 3 hours north, you'll find...
Yeah, if you go to Palmdale, but you'll find snow.
Yes, and a lot of... once again, if you want to see a depressing area, all you have to do is go to the Inland Empire, you go to Palmdale, you drive on the 14, you're good to go.
We were passing through there going up to San Francisco, and it's just like, oh my God.
Yes, the Central Valley, while it is a great place to grow fruits and vegetables. I mean, I knew this one guy. I still don't. I mean, it's the classic thing. I knew it was this guy who was gay, and he was like, he came from Bakersfield. It's the weirdest fucking thing. And he was kind of a flaming kind of guy. Is that his family had come from Massachusetts to move to Bakersfield of all fucking places.
Wow.
I mean, that guy's family life was fucked to the hilt, and of all things, where the sister is a teenage mother twice over now. Obviously the boyfriend is in jail, the mother is some kind of who knows what, and once again, it's fucking Bakersfield. I mean, that is the worst.
The whole narrative fits into Bakersfield completely. So.
Which is once again corn from came from there. What does that tell you? Well, speaking of that, did you know? Speaking of that, did you know kids are still listening to Korn these days?
Wow.
No, I know.
I do know one person who still listens to Korn, and I'm not going to, you know, be too judgmental.
Hey, we're not going to pass, not without sin on this. I'm just saying I thought we had moved on. I mean, once again, I did too.
I didn't even know they were still together, so.
No, they are. I mean, one guy converted to Jesus, and he left, but I was amazed. I was talking to, like, these 17-year-olds, and I'm, like, standing there. I'm like, so you guys still listen to Korn, huh? It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, wow. I was kind of surprised. But at the same time, things haven't really... You know, it's only been 8 years since we graduated. Not a lot of shit has changed, except the cell phones.
But at the same time, you kind of like wonder if they're still like stagnating, if they're still doing the same thing.
That's the funny thing, and I've said this before, because I was going by my old... I was talking about this in the last episode. I was talking about going by my old high school, listening to this metal band playing in the garage, and I'm like, you know, things haven't changed all that much. I mean, some of the technology has, but... things have been all that different, and then at the same time, like, I don't want to go back and do projects and reports.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about having a job. It's like, I've done my shit for the day. I want to go home. Plus, you're getting paid.
Exactly.
So when you have to deal with people, there's the overwhelming goal of, like, I want to be paid. I don't have to deal with this bullshit in class where you have to put up with it for a grade.
Right.
Some people, they miss their times in high school. I never did, but I didn't do jack shit anyway, and I went to two high schools. So, but that was just the way it is. I imagine you felt the same way. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel like your best years were in high school, then you have like a hell of a lot of living to do. So.
And I gotta imagine, especially in a small town. Where, let me guess, and I don't want to go into the stereotype. Did everything in Matt revolve around football?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it was Texas. It was Texas, and we had football.
Oh my God!
So yeah, it's like, and I played briefly, but you know,
I was just about to ask if you played on the team.
I did very briefly. I wasn't any good, so you know, I retired, and then I started, you know, doing drugs and drinking a lot, but at the same time...
Well, what else you had to do?
I mean, it was either... more fun. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of wish that I got, like, into powerlifting back then, but at the same time, it's like, I don't regret it.
Because it wasn't there at the time. I mean, I have that myself, and I've said this before, of like, you know, you wish you had done something else, but it's like, at the same time, you didn't think about it.
Right.
And the opportunity, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, you wish you had done this, and you wish you had done that, but at the same time, the opportunities were not there. How the fuck would you have ever thought about that sort of thing? And then, you know, admittedly, I mean, yeah, you're getting older, but at the same time, there's a time and a place for that stuff. And that's the one thing where, yeah. You know, when you're living on your own, or, you know, you're living with roommates, you have the ability to do stuff. You have, you know, you hopefully you got a few bucks in your pocket.
Of course.
And you're able to, you have the freedom. You're not living under your parents' roof. You're not having to put up with their nonsense. You're not having to live off them. That's the beautiful thing about the independence, and I'm not going Ayn Rand here.
No, you're good.
God help me if I am, because I'll have to be taken out to the shed and beaten. You have that, there's that kind of thing that, yeah, you got to be under a budget. Yeah, you got responsibilities, but at the same time,
you can enjoy yourself to some extent.
You can enjoy yourself. You're not going to put up with yourself in the nonsense of being in that box of whether it's school or putting up with their nonsense and things like that. It's a trade-off, like anything else. And once again, TV is a lying son of a bitch, I can assure you, for the most part, when it talks about high school life. And what can I say? But and speaking of that, I don't know if you saw that trailer for they got that new Teen Wolf coming out.
Oh, no, I haven't even bothered to watch that. I heard that it was a train wreck, and I haven't...
It is a train wreck, I can assure you.
They said it's like heavily pulling from Twilight. They're like,
it is.
Not good.
The wolf effects are not that good. And once again, the wolf effects remind me of the vampire effects from Buffy. And it's just...
Great. So it's basically like the Jacob kid who's like playing Teen Wolf now?
Yeah, I guess so, yes. I mean, they almost got it to me when they saw it. I was like, man, they got a guy that kind of looks like Jared Padalecki in this shot. But,
oh, Lord.
I know. It's like
that
in this one...
That doesn't go very well at all.
It does not look good, I can assure you. It does not look good. But... Anyway, I think with that, we'll wrap ourselves up. So,
sweet.
I don't know if you got anything else that you want to talk about here, but
no,
you know what? But yeah, I think we're good here. But you know, it's certainly been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
We certainly got some good material here. I wish you the best on this new endeavor.
I'll take everything I can get.
You're damn right. I can agree. I certainly can agree. So, for the Ed Hawkins Show, I'm Ed Hawkins.
And I'm Jake Scherzer.
Keep it classy.
See ya. You look good, happily in the rain. I can sell a shoe, babe. Or have you picked your target yet? Yes, I'm there. Good time.